Mr. James Craig, Reel 7. Now, what happened on the trip to the Mediterranean? Was that a routine trip or anything of interest?
No, it was a routine trip, as far as I remember. I don't remember anything special happening.
Any ships go with you?
I think some destroyers from the 8th Flotilla went with us. We had some destroyers with us. I think it was destroyers from the 8th Flotilla, if I remember right. Time dims a memory. You can't remember individual ships unless something special happened.
Now, where was Force H?
Based at Gibraltar.
And suddenly, what there did it was consist the, of at that time, if you remember?
There was the Renown, the aircraft carrier, the Ark Royal. I think for a time the Rodney was there as well, usually a battleship. I think at first it was the Rodney, some cruisers, and a flotilla of destroyers. Well, that's right, it was the 8th flotilla.
Did you know the
F-class destroyers, yeah.
Yeah. Did you know what the purpose of Force H was?
Yes. Actually, they kept us pretty well genned up. They used to, every so often, they would either broadcast or give us a bit of a lecture in the hangar about the state of the war, how things were going, and what we were doing.
So what was Force H meant to be doing?
Force H, escorting convoys into the Mediterranean, to Malta, down Africa. Then we used to go escort convoys down as far as Freetown and come back. Escort them halfway back to home waters and return to Gibraltar. So mostly convoy duties.
Now, what do you remember? Do you remember any particular convoy or any, you know, that I know it's difficult to, you probably did lots, but any that come to mind?
I can't remember actually any individual convoys that I did with HMS Renown, because come the spring we came back to home waters when Hitler invaded Norway.
So that would be May?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
In April.
I think it was April, actually, because when we came back, we found there was difference from a nice, warm Mediterranean. We came back to Norway. And it was in April because as she was invading the aircraft carrier, the Glorious got sunk, didn't she, by the Scharnhorst and Neisenau. And thereafter we met the Scharnhorst and Neisenau while it was under Renown. And there was a blinding snowstorm, actually. The action took place in a snowstorm.
Now, hang on, that's a little later, though.
Yeah.
So when you went back there, you went back in April.
Yeah.
And that was to Scapa, was it?
Yes.
And what happened when you got back? I mean, you were cold, but I mean, other than that, what's the first thing you remember?
The first thing, we went back to Recife, and we were from Scapa, we were back to Recife, and we were actually based at Recife. I think that's the same place as they based the battle cruisers in the First World War. Yeah. And our job was patrolling in the North Sea.
Now, what did that entail? What were the patrols not like?
The North Sea, at that time of the year, can get quite rough, really. Fairly cold. Fairly roughish weather. With wartime, you didn't stay in harbour because the weather was rough. You still went to sea. And if there was any intelligence that they thought some German ships might be out or anything had been reported, they sent us out to see what we could do or find it or
And what was it like on the ship in rough weather?
The room was fairly comfortable. She didn't roll too much. She pitched quite a bit. She was very long and narrowish compared with the battleship. She was quite long and she used to pitch a bit, and it was very slow heave up and down, you know. Now, on a small ship, it's very quick, fast, and you're bumping about all over the place. But on the big ship, you're all over to one side and you keep going, and you think we'll be back in a minute, and then you go a bit further, and then you eventually come back and very slowly go the other way. And then with that up and down, yawing as they call it, you feel as though you're walking uphill, and the next minute you're walking downhill as you're going from one place to another. You know, it's like walking up and down a hill, really. Amazing, yeah. I was very fortunate that I've never got seasick, so I was lucky.
Now, who would go with you in the sweeps into the North Sea, or patrols?
Well, usually there'd be some other capital ships, and destroyers and cruisers, yeah.
So much more what they called a sweep rather than a patrol.
Yes.
Now, anything happen in any of these around about April?
No, I can't recall anything in particular happening apart from, as you say, sweeps as opposed to patrols. But they did do patrols further north, more or less covering the north part of Scotland in case any of the ships tried to break out. But I don't remember anything in particular. Until
was this clashing of the snowstorm?
On the invasion of Normandy after the
Norway.
Norway, yeah.
Well, tell us about that. What happened?
Well, it was during that when the glowworm and the Acates got sunk, didn't they, with the aircraft carrier.
What was Renown doing then?
We were covering forces, because we had landed some forces in Norway as well, and we were covering those. In the middle of a snowstorm, it was really rough and a very big snowstorm, and we sighted the Scharnhorst in the Nice now on April. There was a date in April.
I don't
know what they said. They called it the Battle of the Lofoten Islands. Yeah. And in fact, they afterwards produced a pennant on the ship, you know, with the Battle of the Lofoten Islands on it.
Now, what do you remember? I mean, what were you? Were you actually on the rangefinder?
I wasn't at the time. I was helping out in one of the gun screws at the time, one of the 4.5-inch guns at the time.
And why was that? Was that just your cruising today? What was
Yeah. That was for that particular watch that we were in. We met the Scharnhorst in Nice now, and exchanged shots at a fairly long range. We evidently hit one of them and put her in repairs for about 6 months. And she actually hit us with a salvo off her 11-inch shells. Now, one of them drilled a hole through the middle of the tripod mast, right through where the tripod meets. The shell actually went straight through there and drilled an 11-inch hole right through it. One of the shells bounced off the hangar deck.
How badly?
Just wrecked a bit of the hangar deck. Not too bad, really. Nobody got hurt there. I believe the gunnery officer on the bridge got a bit of shrapnel in his foot or something when the one hit the tripod mast. Another shell hit us on the torpedo blisters and didn't explode. One shell hit us down aft, drilled a hole in through the ship's side, 11 inches, fell down through the deck, turned round, cleared the officer's bathroom in the midship flat, and went out the other side and took a bloody great plate off. And they reckoned the reason was they had been firing armour-piercing shells at us, but the fact that we didn't have any armour, the shells went straight through. So, just goes to show you. Anyway, it cleared the back end, you know. We got a huge leak up front, which put us in dock while they repaired it. So we all got some leave, you know. But it's amazing that you're saying the lack of armour was a thing. Not helpful, but in that case it was helpful. Because they could have done some serious damage, you know. Especially with the one that went down aft, they could have wrecked all the steering and everything, you know.
And what could you see from your perspective in the 4.5 turret?
Well, on this occasion, I couldn't see anything. Apart from the fact that we shot off hundreds of 4.5-inch shells.
Now, what at?
Yeah. We shot them at the target.
I thought they were at long range, you see.
They were at long range. And we asked the chap on the gun sight, you know, what's happening with our shells? He said, it looks like a picket fence about halfway between us and the target. Whether it was to confuse them or not, I don't know.
Now, what was your role? What was your role in the gun crew? Do you know what I mean? On the 4.5?
Oh, yes.
Could you if you could take us through the whole of the 4.5 drill and what where you were in it.
Oh, yeah. In the 4.5 turrets, which, apart from being on an open swept deck, was nice and comfortable inside in the casemate, quite roomy, all the loading, I think there was about 19 in the crew of a 4.5 inch turret, with all the loaders and ammunition people and everything. I think there was about 19. They were all automatically powered. You didn't have any handwork to do. The loading, the ammunition supply and everything, the loading and ammunition and everything was it was automatic. It used to come off the battery and you just humped it off over to the gun. Put it in the tray, that was rammed automatically, and they could have a terrific rate of fire on the thing, you know. They were really quick. And of course it was a hive of activity, because from where the ammunition came up to where the gun was, it was a matter of some feet, and people shifting all this ammunition all the time.
So mainly it was moving ammunition, there wasn't any ranging or anything else?
No, there was nothing to do. The only thing that had to be done, the layer and the trainer had to, of course, follow the pointers on their instruments, because that was done from the control director, the low-angle control director.
Anything else about the battle of Lofoten Island?
We were all very relieved that nobody had been hurt, really. That was the main thing. We were amazed when we got out of the turret and went forward to our mess. We were actually ankle deep in water where they'd been hit forward, and the water had come in and it had sprung all the bilge, it had sprung all the bilges and rolled them back, and there was quite a lot of water swirling about in the flats. I think there was a feeling that we'd done a good job, really. We thought, well, we've seen them off, you know. And they reckoned we'd hit, I forget which one it was now, we hit one of them on the after turret and put it in dock for about 6 months out of the way whilst we got repaired, yeah.
So what happened next? What's the next thing you remember? That's April.
Yeah, we went back to the Scythe and they repaired the bits of damage to the ship.
in the Rosyth Dockyard.
In the Rosyth Dockyard, yeah. And we got a few days leave each watch while they did the repair work. So I was able to nip home on the bus from Rosyth, so it was handy, yeah.
And around about this time, you also got promotion to AB, actually just before that, February 1940.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it make a difference being made able seaman?
Oh, yeah. Got made able seaman, first of all, your pay went up. Then, if you got any leave, you could stay ashore all night and come back next morning at 8 o'clock when the work started on the ship. So you could have overnight leave. Once again, they removed some restrictions on your leave period. You could go ashore at 4 in the afternoon and come back next morning at 8 o'clock, as long as you came back in time for the start of the work next morning. The fact that you maybe got a bit more responsibility, they might detail you off with a couple of younger seamen or something to do a job or look after something, or you know, I think you got a bit more trusted to do your work without too much supervision.
So what happened next then?
I was pleased when I got made able seamen. I thought, you know,
was it early? Or was it about normal?
About normal. I think it might have been a little bit early, because, yes. When did you say it was? On the
It says here, that, I mean, I can only go by this, that it was 1st of February 1940.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, well, it would have been a little bit early, because normally I would have been made able seaman on my birthday, on the 2nd of April, so just a few weeks early, yeah.
Now, what's the next thing you remember after this April battle, and then I presume the rest of April into May, you were in the dockyard?
Yeah, we're in the dockyard, at Rosyth.
Mm. Were you still there while all the Dunkirk business was going on then?
Dunkirk.
That's May, June.
May. April, May. No, I think we'd come out then, but we were not involved. Not involved in Dunkirk. We were down, they sent us to the South Atlantic looking for the Glass Bay.
Now, what do you remember of that?
We did patrols. We went down to Freetown, worked from there sometimes. Sometimes we went to Cape Town, and they did patrols, or sweeps, as you say, in the South Atlantic, looking for the Glass Bay. Yeah.
You didn't find her?
We didn't. The three cruisers found her, and we were a bit of the propaganda that we were outside waiting for her when she came out, if she sailed. In fact, we were at just coming down from, we'd gone across the Atlantic and had to call in Rio de Janeiro to effect a quick repair and get some oil. And we were actually on the way down from Rio de Janeiro down to the River Plate when the ship blew itself up. So we went actually outside waiting for her. I think the propaganda said that we were. There was Renown and the Ark Royal, both on the way down from Rio down to the River Plate. Yeah.
So what happened next then?
Next, where did we go from then? We went back to the Mediterranean then. We went back to Gibraltar to Forsage.
You rejoined it?
Mm.
Anything about that time? You weren't with her much longer, I wouldn't have thought, because you leave in November.
Leave in November,
What do you remember of your second period at Forsage at Gibraltar?
second period with Force H, we met the we had some runs into the Mediterranean, saw the Italian fleet a couple of times in the distance.
Anything happened, or was it just abortive?
Not while I was on the Renown. By this time, with all my instruction and everything, I'd become fully qualified in this control rating branch.
Talk to me a bit about that then. What else had you learned to do?
But they're just beginning to introduce radar. So, in the control branch, apart from just doing range taking as you would as a range taker, a control branch, you got jobs in the fire control places. You got jobs in that, and started to learn about radar and things that we were introducing. Yeah.
Now, what sort of set was it? What do you remember of the early sets you had on the that you were being trained on there?
Oh, the early sets. Well, it was much like an old-fashioned television aerial up the top of the mast, connected down to a gear wheel at the bottom, and a very tiny screen which showed up. A very tiny screen which showed up echoes and things. Yeah. Very primitive, really. But it was quite good.
Were you taught on ship then, or did you go off for a course?
No, we were taught mostly on the ship. Sometimes you'd go for a week into a shore establishment where they had the mock-ups of these things. Yeah. In fact, when we were on the Renown, we were surprised really at first. There was only one of the cruisers. There was only two ships with us that had this radar, and they could give us warning of the approach of aircraft. And we were amazed in the gunnery control that they could say, you know, aircraft sighted 70 miles away, you know, and coming in this direction. So we were all forewarned then. We thought it was amazing at the time, you know, yeah.
So anything else happened while you were at Gibraltar? Do you remember any of the convoys to Malta, I presume you were doing that?
Oh yes, I did that for quite a long time.
With
but mostly after I left the Renown.
Oh no, I mean on the Renown.
No, not on the Renown. We did some, but they were fairly uneventful, really.
So what happens next then?
Now, got to the Ottomouth, where 1940 we're in. That's got it. To the Ottomouth of 1940, and I just actually finished qualifying for this control rating at the time. And a notice appeared in the board say that control rating was required to volunteer for a destroyer. You know, they're short of a control rating on the destroyer, and they needed a volunteer.
Now, why did you volunteer? I presume you did, so why?
Well, I thought back to my few days on the Mackay, and I thought I'd like to go back to destroyers.
Even though the Renown was a happy ship, and you know.
Oh, she was, yeah, and had some good friends, and they got on very well there, you know. I still thought I would like to go back and have a look at destroyers again, yeah. So, I volunteered. They say never volunteer, but I volunteered. In fact, all the ships during the war, the subsequent ones in the war, I did volunteer for. But I volunteered for the destroyer and found myself climbing over the guardrail of HMS Faulkner, the leader of the 8th Destroyer Flotilla.
Now, HMS... No, was she was a destroyer then, or was she a light cruiser?
No, she was a destroyer. Well, flotilla leader, Flotilla leader destroyer, yeah.
And what was HMS Faulkner like? Well, where did you join her? You left the
Renown
in November 1940 and joined the Faulkner. Where was the Faulkner when you joined?
She was in Gibraltar Harbour.
So you just went across the harbour?
Went across the harbour with me bag and hammock and climbed over the guardrail at the back. And that was it.
And what were your first impressions of the Faulkner?
Okay, really. I thought, it's nice to be on a ship, small ship again. Yeah. And I got welcome quite well.
In what way?
The quartermaster got hold of the yacht of the day, and I had to report aboard. The quartermaster said, I've got my messenger, he'll take you up to your mess, to help carry my bag and hammock up to the mess. That was quite good. I was the replacement for a guy who, the chap had gone sick or something, and been taken ashore sick to hospital. I had a station card already made out, and I was in the forecastle party again. And there was in the seaman's mess, number one seaman's mess, and met the leading hand there, the leading seaman, the Killick, and he seemed quite a nice guy, and I settled in quite well on the Faulkner.
So now, what were the 8th Destroyer Flotilla doing? What were they responsible? Were they with Force H or?
They were with the 8th Destroyer Flotilla, where the screen for Force H, and Force H was by then it was the Renown, the Art Royal, and can't remember the cruiser. It was a cruiser and Force H. That was Force H and the 8th Destroyer Flotilla.
That was the main job as a screen.
The main job was screening Force H, yeah.